Totally Football Show. As 2017 goes the way of East and Heaven, and just, Team Totally is here to bring you end-of-year thoughts from around Europe and the latest news from the Christmas period, because football never stops. Harry Kane becoming the best striker in the world, Tony Pulis getting a new job, Tom Ince scoring a goal thing, and Liverpool. They've had the clock, they've got VD. Now are they going to really challenge? That's all coming up in this festive Totally Football Show. And here they are. Julien Laurent, Joyeux Noël.
Joyeux Noël, James.
Happy Hanukkah to you, Raphael Honigstein.
Merry Christmas.
Anyone listening in German, what would we be saying?
Frohe Weihnachten.
Oh, nice.
But it's already gone, really.
Okay.
Frohe Feiertage.
Happy New Year, Raph.
Frohes Neues Jahr.
There you go. Happy New Year to you, Michael.
Yeah, happy
Cox.
New Year to you. Thanks.
Sorry, I wasn't just saying Cox. I'm just saying Michael Cox.
It was an awkward gap, but yeah.
It was awkward.
Let's fill that awkward gap.
All right. What do you want to fill it with? Van Dijk.
Van Dijk?
Yeah. Yeah, Van Dijk, because that's the... I mean, that's all I'm talking about right now. I picked up this morning's Gazetta. What's on the front page? Folia. Or maybe craziness, they say. Craziness.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought Italians might appreciate a good defender.
Well, that's, I guess, the question. How good a defender is he? Let's get some thoughts from people writing in today. Jean-Paul Superion says, do Liverpool have enough loyalty points for a free Saints player? Well, that gets a chuckle. Nice one, Jean-Paul. David Starsky, after hearing Rafa rant about it not being the defence with Liverpool, ask him how he feels. Is Klopp personally disagreeing with him by spending so much on a defender? Rafa?
I don't think there's ever a case that a team cannot be improved by bringing in great players. I think we now have to appreciate that what Klopp was telling us was obviously a version of the truth designed to be palatable for his own... Hold on a second. For his own team rather than the rest of the public. Because the plan, they must have had some very strong assurances that they could pull it off in January. Because that was the only explanation why they never went for anyone else.
Right.
And when they didn't, then he said, because we didn't go for anyone else because we're so good already.
Hmm.
Which I don't think anyone really, truly, truly believed.
If there was a vacancy for the Duncan Castles of Anfield, it's been filled now.
What do you want me to say?
Club spokesman.
I don't understand.
No, I like your answer. I like your answer, Rafa, as always.
I will never say to you that Klopp is infallible and gets everything right and is wonderful. I'm not the Duncan Castles of Klopp.
Okay, all right. All right, then. But they do look better. I mean, people arguing about whether he's worth it, for me, is a pointless task because... These figures, I mean, you pay what you have to pay.
Exactly.
And they earn so much money now anyway that they can afford it, obviously.
Yeah. What's funny, though, is that it cost them 25 million more than in the summer when the price seemed to be 50 million.
And but it's not like he's had a good...
Exactly, he's been rubbish. So, in a way, you look at it and say, like, oh, okay, they had to pay another 25 million for someone who hasn't been very good this 6 months, who didn't play the last 6 months of last season because he was injured. So someone we haven't really seen being played well for a year now. So let's hope for them that he's going to go back to that level, which is probably, his heart was clearly not in it this season. That's probably why it didn't really bother.
Right.
It still does smack of a lack of imagination to say, this is the only defender that can really improve us and we have to spend that much money on him. There's absolutely no one else.
Who should they have got then?
I'm not a scout. I don't look at defenders all over Europe.
Julien?
But
there's plenty.
One name I did mention the other day, which is a player that Dortmund interest in, is Manuel Akanji, Swiss international of Nigerian descent, who's looked absolutely outstanding and is attracting a lot of interest. And in Basel, they're saying, ha-ha, Dortmund idiots, they'll have to pay 20 million euros for this. We're going to really cash in here. You know, he might not be Van Dijk right now, but he might be Van Dijk tomorrow.
Right.
I don't know if I really think that, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you spend as long as it's the right player for you. I think there's a cost to doing that because you could have spent that money on three or four players who might really improve you.
But we've seen that happen before, and it's always a mistake, isn't it?
What do you mean?
When you buy the Beatles after selling Elvis, all that business.
Ah, come on,
Michael. Where do you stand on Van Dijk?
I think he's a good enough player. I'd be a little bit concerned if I was Liverpool. When you look at previous Southampton defenders who have left, I mean, Lovren was great at Southampton, hasn't looked very good at Liverpool. Jose Font was excellent at Southampton, has been really poor for West Ham. Yeah. Even Klein and Shaw in slightly different positions and, you know, with Shaw slightly extenuating circumstances. I think, you know, defending is all about a unit, really. And I think it's relatively difficult to just pluck one individual from another team and expect him to improve your defence overnight.
Interesting. I suppose Bonucci at Milan would be a pretty good...
Possibly, yeah. And I mean, as you say, he hasn't played much this year and he hasn't played well. Mm. So it could be next season, really, before he gets up and running and up to full fitness. But that might be what Liverpool are looking towards now. I mean, obviously the title race is over. I think they will finish in the top four. And with Naby Keita coming in as well, you know, they could have a very good team for next year. Mm. Maybe without Coutinho, but I think they can get over that.
The other big news, of course, Tony Pulis getting hired by Borough. That hit me like a slap in the face with a wet fish, which certainly wakes you up at this time of year. The Borough fans get all the laughs, don't they? They had Aitor Karanka, now they get Tony Pulis. They're 3 points off the top six. Is it worth it, Michael?
I haven't seen much of Borough this season. I think Pulis is a good manager. At any level, really. I mean, we've become accustomed to seeing him as someone who keeps teams up. But he's also got a good record at getting teams promoted. It's always quite amazing how he manages to get teams promoted, scoring so few goals. I think with Gillingham, this is about 20 years ago, but with Gillingham, I think they scored less than a goal a game and still got promotion from the third tier. So, yeah, it's not going to be laugh a minute for Borough fans, but I expect they've got a good chance of promotion this season.
Yeah. It was a bit of a surprise, Gary Monk getting given his marching orders, whichever phrase you want to use, straight after a win over Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it? It was that same evening, I think.
Yeah. Yes, and Carlos Carvajal got sacked as well from Wednesday.
Well, indeed, Michael, because you'll never believe it, but that's who Swansea have just decided, Carlos Carvajal, is going to be taking over there at the Liberty.
Yeah, strange one. I mean, he got them to the playoffs twice with Sheffield Wednesday. Mm. But, having been sacked from that job, it's somewhat of a surprise that he's jumped up to the Premier League. I mean, he's coached Sporting Lisbon and Besiktas before. He's got experience at big clubs.
Right.
Not big leagues, really. But, it's an odd one. And you think qualifying for the playoffs might be his job in about a year's time, to be honest, if he's still there.
Yeah, indeed so.
I like it.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah, why, George? Because I think he did a really good job at Wednesday with a very, very, very average squad.
Okay.
And I think, a bit like Marcos Silva, I think there's something interesting in him. Another Portuguese manager. You know, there start to be a lot of them in the Premier League. I think he's a very interesting one. And I'm so glad we didn't go back to like one of those old English guys. I mean, yeah.
Maybe you didn't. I bet it's going on out there, though.
Yeah.
I bet it is.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, interesting to see what it does then.
It will be interesting. Swansea this weekend they're at Watford. So, yeah, mention Marco Silva, that's who they're facing this weekend.
And they will need reinforcement, obviously, in January. Mm. But there's some really good players. When you see a player like Roque Mesa, who was really, really good with Las Palmas last season, who was a very good signing, even if you can argue with the fact that he really made for English football. But still, he's a very talented player. But you see him play now, he seems to have lost all confidence and everything.
Right, you could almost be talking about Renato Sanches as well, another of Swansea's high-profile arrivals, who, of course, Portuguese, like Carlos Carvajal.
Yeah, and I think they have good players, maybe not good enough right now to stay, but if you add one or two, and if you can get them playing better, being better organised... a bit more fighting spirit as well. Yeah, no, there's a lot of it, but it's not an easy job. But at least he's taken it. Huh. Maybe a few people wouldn't have taken it.
Indeed.
Poor old Burnley. They went 2-0 up against Man United on Boxing Day, only to see Jesse Lingard hit two late goals and they left Old Trafford with 1 point instead of three. Well, with two up from Paddy Power, you can back any team in the Premier League or La Liga to win. And if they go two goals up, Paddy will pay out immediately as a winner, even if that team ends up losing. Or indeed drawing, in Burnley's case. Head to paddypower.com to find out more. T's and C's apply. Win, draw, win, singles only. Exclude shop and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. Be gambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Michael Cox, who had the best of the Christmas fixtures?
Is it boring to say Man City?
I don't think so.
I mean, they just keep on stretching.
Factually correct.
Yeah, they just keep on stretching that lead at the top. United have drawn their last two.
Yeah.
City have won their last two. So...
Here's a stat.
It's City. They're not slowing down.
They're not, are they? Mr. Chip, all the way over there in Spain, points out that Man City could lose from here until February and they would still be in first place. That's impressive.
That's impressive. They could go on a winter break.
Yeah. They could. They could go to Dubai. That's magnificent. Although there is that old adage about the tortoise and the hare, you know, so... Yeah, sorry, Julian.
No, I think someone said on Twitter last night they could lose 15 of their remaining games and still finish with more points than they did last season.
Good
under Pep.
Lord.
That's how improved they've been.
That's an extraordinary statistic.
It is.
Yeah. The latest victory in their 18-game winning sequence was at Newcastle, of course, on Wednesday night. 1-0. John Nicholson out of Football 365 saying losing 1-0 to City now officially counts as a win. We've kind of got to that state. It was a bizarre game as well because, for my money, Newcastle very nearly ended their winning run in this game, even though they got completely outplayed.
Yeah, they did have a couple of good chances, Newcastle. One in particular when Otamendi had to head over the bar. Yeah, a really strange game. I don't think I've ever seen a Premier League side be so defensive at home. Mm. I mean, Newcastle's first action was Jonjo Shelvey shooting from centre. And with Shelvey, you always wonder what's going through his brain, but it seemed like Newcastle just wanted to give the ball away and then retreat into their own third of the pitch and just defended. You know, it wasn't even really a counter-attacking approach. It was just a defensive approach. And I thought it was depressingly quite successful in a way. You know, I mean, I think it would liven up the Premier League if City did drop points, but not if everyone, you know, looks to Newcastle getting a result and or nearly getting a result and tries to play that way. And I thought City's main chances came from set of pieces and crosses. I think Benitez probably would have taken that before the game. I thought City looked poor without Silva, or relatively poor without Silva. It was just De Bruyne creating, and they were going wide more than you expect for City. So I thought it was a weird game. It was slightly depressing to see Newcastle play so defensively, especially because the last time we were talking about an unbeaten run to a season, it was Chelsea in 2014-15, and they eventually lost at Newcastle.
Did they?
And I remember being there and thinking, this is the kind of game, you know, to use a cliche, that makes the Premier League what it is, not difficult on paper, but you go away to Newcastle, you're always going to get a challenge. And City didn't really get that until they scored.
Well, Sunday, I know you're going to Selhurst Park, Michael, for Palace's clash with Man City, which I rather fancifully flagged up before Christmas as being where I thought the winning run would end. I was just saying it for the sake of saying it,
well,
to be fair.
It looks a better shout now that they haven't dropped points in the last two games.
Now that they haven't?
Yeah. So the winning run hasn't come to an end already. So you're not definitely wrong yet.
So there's that. Okay. Last two meetings, which were both at the Etihad, have ended 5-0. The four games before that were 3-0, 2-1, 4-0 and 5-1. But, you know, it's football, isn't it? Still football. OK, I'll move on. The other big winners of this Christmas period, Harry Kane, Julianne.
Do you know what? This might sound a bit controversial. 56 goals is great, no problem at all.
Uh-oh.
It's not... But it's not... It's clearly not... Yeah. Not that hard to score over 50 goals this season because a few players have done it. No, but if he was the only one at 56 and the next one was 40, you'd say, okay.
Yeah, but the other names on that list, Messi.
But he's part of the name that I think this
who else is on there?
Messi, Cavani, Lewandowski, Ronaldo,
yeah.
All over 50.
I mean, these are some of the greatest.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't know what. I think the debate is closed. He's amongst them now. There's still
the thing is for me that none of them look like they've come around to fix your boiler, which is the thing that really blows my mind about
Harry Kane.
But
maybe that's. But if Harry Kane was not English, you lot in here would like.
Us lot in here?
Yeah, as in English people or British people,
right,
would absolutely like praise him and everything. That's what I don't understand. It's
so
like
you want
you're
to
so
praise
insecure
him or not
by your own
him.
Football that even your best player is still, well, he's
Julian,
in world
but
class.
You started out saying
no,
that you
sure.
weren't impressed with him
no,
scoring
no,
56.
No, but you didn't let me finish.
Oh, okay.
The most impressive for me is not the 56 goals, although that's an amazing achievement.
Yes.
Is the number of hat-tricks. Because goals will come in a game for players like him or Cavani or Messi, Lewandowski. They will always come.
Right.
There's no doubt of that. But for him to score 8 hat-tricks in 2017, which is more than, I know we're going to say, Cavani, Messi, Ronaldo, Lewandowski and Aguero all put together.
You're joking.
They only have 7 all between them, and he's got 8. And it's not so much that. The ratio for a striker of their calibre is around 25%. So, you know, you score 1 every 4 chance. Basically, well, 1 every 4 chances. Sometimes it'll be higher. You could go up to 35. I think Aubameyang at 32 at some point last year, which is, you know, 1 every 3. It's pretty awesome. So for him to score those hat tricks far more than everybody else ever this year, it's something special and shows you how efficient he's been, you know, through the year. And I'm far more impressed by the number of hat-tricks than just the goals itself.
I'm fascinated by your impression that people in this country aren't excited about Harry Kane.
I can't understand it.
We are excited about Harry Kane.
I don't think so. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I still think, like, he's an amazing player. He's probably one of the... Well, he's one of the best players. He's only 24.
Yes.
He's one of the best you've ever had. And, you know, he potentially can become the best ever English player you've ever had. And I still think people are very underwhelmed by him, probably because, like you said, he's like your plumber from, you know, next door.
He is, actually.
And if he was more bling-bling, if he was a bit more like Cristiano, maybe people would, you know, he doesn't have much charisma maybe for people. I don't know why. But I still find it amazing that he's, for me, doesn't get the credit that he deserves and people don't love him more, don't praise him more. You know, everybody makes a joke about Shearer or like Gary Lineker going like, oh, you know, Alan Shearer, this Alan Shearer. It's not about Alan Shearer losing his record. It's about Harry Kane having that incredible year. I don't care about Alan Shearer and if he's losing his record from 20 years ago.
That's fair, Julian. I imagine, although I can't really remember that well, that people were more giddy about Wayne Rooney when he first burst onto the scene than they are now about Keane. Does that sound fair?
Yeah,
definitely true. And that's probably partly because Rooney was more of an all-round player, someone who could drop deep and...
Kane does that increasingly well, doesn't he?
To a certain extent. I still think Kane's basically a goal scorer. Whereas I think what England fans wanted at that time was someone who, and he's a different player, but someone who could kind of replace Gascoigne in terms of really running a game. I mean, Kane's achievements are incredible. I have a slight issue with this being considered a record, this calendar year stuff. I mean, I don't know where this came from a few years ago, but football's never really been measured in calendar years. I gather that a few years ago, Van Persie came close to breaking this record and Shearer was on Match of the Day and had no idea he had this record. So this calendar year thing, people have only started doing it a couple of years ago and seems quite irrelevant to me. What's more interesting to me is that Kane's on the way to winning a third top goalscorer prize. You look at the players who've done that in the history of English football, Shearer, Lineker, Henry, Jimmy Greaves, and then two back from the 19th century. So to win three over the course of a season, which is what football's all about, is really unique. And I'm much more excited about that than this calendar year thing, which seems quite irrelevant to me.
Okay.
And let's not forget that Dixie Dean scored more goals than Alan Shearer and Harry Kane in a calendar year before.
Right, and that was one of those old leather footballs as well.
Yeah.
Raf, are you impressed with Harry Kane?
Yeah, how can you not be impressed with him? I'm with Michael on the 2017 thing. I think it's a little bit of a artificial stat. It's basically giving someone two chances to have a great record in a season and then in a calendar year. So maybe one or two. But he, much
Arsenal,
more relevant,
for example, will often be champions of a calendar year.
Well, it made me think of Arsenal and made me think of Wenger when he came out after the 10-2 aggregate defeat against Bayern and said, we drew the first two halves, 1-1. And this is a little bit like that, you know.
Oh,
yes,
Fred.
He might have done, but...
Did he say that in seriousness?
He did.
But the Arsenal thing kind of does say something because they were getting points, but they weren't doing it in the right period, which I think would indicate some kind of psychological problem or whatever. Kane's going to be top goal scorer 3 years in a row. So, you know, it's not particularly exciting that if you structure it another way, he's also doing very well. It just seems a bit of a red herring.
Okay. It might be because we were in the business with football, and I tend to think of my life in football seasons now as opposed to calendar years. But maybe the vast majority of people, they do measure it from January 1st to January the 1st, and therefore it does have a resonance.
I think it's that contagious effect of the Ballon d'Or.
Ah.
People think in calendar years now.
James, do you use an academic year diary rather than a yearly diary?
Do they exist?
Yeah. Because that's what I do, because it tallies with the football season.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I don't use the diary, actually.
No one does. I think I'm the only one who...
Do you write entries?
I mean, I write what I'm going to do. It's not
you
like
don't
a...
kind of reflectively at the end of the day keep a
no, no there's, surprisingly, like a, there's no post-match analysis, no.
Oh, that is a shame. Maybe that's something for 2018 you could do. We could all write. I bet that would be really good for us. Anyway, I'm wandering off the topic. Speaking
he's astonishing.
I'm wandering off the topic.
No, he is astonishing. Oh. Harry Kane,
yeah. Speaking of great goal scorers, Tom Ince. First goal of the season in Huddersfield's 1-1 draw with Stoke. 45 shots he'd taken before this went in. What is ironic, perhaps? His only other goal in the Premier League came all the way back in February 2014 for Crystal Palace, and that was with his first shot. So with his first shot in the Premier League, he scored. He then had another 45 with that. And now with his last shot so far. Right.
Yeah. Isn't it more incredible that both Huddersfield and Brighton sit right bang in the middle of the table?
That is amazing.
Whereas before the start of the season, nobody really gave much of a chance. Certainly not Huddersfield. I mean, I had them to go down and they might still go down, but to see them up in 11th is just incredible.
Well, it is incredible, but what's behind it? Is it the fact that it's unbelievably easy this season to be mid-table and Watford have been on a terrible run and they're still there in 10th?
How can it be unbelievably easy?
Well, I'm exaggerating a bit, but there's not a huge amount of quality there in the middle of the
Has the there ever been a huge amount of quality in the middle?
I don't know.
I think more so in previous seasons than this season. I think pretty much everyone from eighth down has been pretty poor this season. I think usually you have a couple of teams, you know, whether it's a kind of Pye-inspired West Ham or a Swansea side that were good in possession, or, you know, even Pochettino. Southampton, I think, were eighth or something, but were a good team. I think there's a lot of 5 out of 10s this year and not many 7 out of 10s, if we can put it that way.
I'm chuckling because I remember Giancarlo Galavotti, the former Gazzetta dello Sport correspondent, being interviewed on the BBC. And this was the heyday of the Premier League, so 2008, 2009. And he, live on radio, said, well, you've got the top five teams and then the rest is absolute and they were saying, what? Excuse me? Okay. Yeah, they're absolute repeated it.
What Mourinho would call S.
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 So I don't know. I don't know if the middle has been ever been
all right. Impressive. And to be fair, Watford did go on a great run earlier, which has earned them the ability to slack off a bit and still stick on the left-hand side of things. Is that enough winners? Anybody else you want to say as a winner from this Christmas double round?
I think Roberto Firmino looks like a winner because he scores loads of goals and he's now a little bit taken over from Salah and certainly from Mane, who was maybe made the early running of the season as the goal scorer that might deliver for Liverpool this season. He's been in tremendous form.
Has Klopp begun to rely on him more? Is he making him more central to the way Liverpool try and seek goals?
Not really. I mean, he's the most central of the strikers, but they interchange quite a lot. I think he's the most important in the way of setting the tempo and the intensity. He wins back a lot of balls. He commits actually quite a lot of fouls to break up counterattacks, which is very important. He usually tries to get the ball, but if he doesn't, at least it's a foul, which is just almost just as valuable. And I think that is really important for him. More important than having a proven, in inverted commas, goal scorer who will just switch off when they don't have the ball. I think that's why, for example, the Benteke-Liverpool partnership never really worked. And that's why Sturridge, I think, will never really be a Klopp player either, because he just doesn't bring that same kind of intensity
or
to chase back. Or teeth. The teeth are very bright,
aren't they?
Is that a Brazilian thing?
No, he has them done through the season, didn't he? But I think this time they were just a bit out of order, weren't they?
Brazilian, producer Ben points out, is something quite different that leaves another body quite shiny.
Right. I'm not au fair with these things.
Right. Let's talk about who had the worst Christmas after this. Who had an S Christmas? Swansea, quite literally. Bottom of the table for the third Christmas in a row. Southampton, what about them?
I don't know. I mean, we've talked, and again, I don't want to go on about Claude Puel, right? But no, but it's true. No, you get someone in for him, and it's always is the grass greener somewhere else. And that's the thing. I don't know why they sacked him.
It's a big message for 2017. Yeah, is the grass greener somewhere else?
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know. Is West Brom? I mean, is Alan Pardew still in charge? Is he still there?
He is. But Saints, 11 games without a win, 2 points off the drop. They got hammered by Spurs. They drew with Stoke. Charlie Austin's out for 3 games. They've now lost Van Dijk, but of course he wasn't part of their plans of late anyway. They've got United on Saturday. And, pundits on Match of the Day suggesting that the dressing room has turned on Pellegrino.
Yeah, very hard, I think, to judge from a distance. But certainly the team were absolutely, as Jules said, pathetic in their application. The midfield was not there. I don't recall a goalkeeping performance as bad since the Grobbelaar days, really. And we know what happened then. It was puzzling to see a team that earlier in the season, certainly last season, looked one of the most organised sides, one of the hardest to play against, really awkward, always give you very little time on the ball, super organised, to be that dishevelled and disorganised this time.
Really, with two poor performances in goal that game, because Lloris pretty much chucked two in his own net and nearly scored an own goal kind of from a Danny Rose back header. So, funny game. That's why you get seven goals, I guess.
I guess.
Talking about Tom Ince, you know, and those...
Oh, yeah.
Shane Long. Hasn't Shane Long hasn't scored for like 3 years or something in the Premier League? Isn't it something like that ridiculous?
Yeah.
He must have had a lot of shots.
It's all the hard work he does.
Oh, right. Okay. All the running. Okay.
Southampton, of course, will have £75 million to spend on bringing in some goal scoring talent. Anyone they should go for, Julien?
The question is more like who would want to go there, obviously, to start
anyone
with.
Anyone who'd like to go to Liverpool.
Yeah, eventually. You're right. It's a good platform, actually.
Why wouldn't they want to go to Southampton?
They have, because of the situation, like you said, no wins in 11. The manager clearly might be gone at some point very soon. I don't know. However, they have a very good academy, although when things are not going your way, I'm not sure young players with no experience is the answer. But they also have a very good scouting network. They have very good people in charge of their recruitment. That's why, you know, they get all those players that then they sell very well. So I'm sure they have a few options to replace Virgil van Dijk, maybe not at his level, but someone a bit like Rafa was saying with Akanji, someone who will be very good very soon, but might not be at that level right now, but that's what they do. So I wouldn't be worried about the recruitment on who's coming in January. I would be more worried about what's going to happen.
Long.
Yeah, Shane Long and his scoring drought.
Right. Gabby Dean is not exactly setting the scoring charts on fire either. In my Who Had a Bad Christmas pile, I've got top of it. I've got Man United. Although they didn't lose, they had a pair of 2-2s.
Yeah.
But it just felt like a defeat. I mean, they slipped further back from City.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess it's the nature of football. You're, in points terms, you're better winning one and losing one rather than getting two draws, especially two draws against teams they should be beating, really. I thought the Burnley game was...
But when Burnley are spending, what is it, like centre-forward prices on their defenders, how can Mourinho be expected to beat them, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, well, United weren't atrocious against Burnley, but their defending in the first 20-25 minutes was awful. Two set-piece goals conceded from two reckless challenges, one from Rojo, who's managed to get a suspension for 5 bookings, having barely played about...
He's played 5 games and got bookings in all of them.
Yeah. Is that right, really?
Yeah.
5-5, okay. And the other one from Ashley Young, they've got big defensive problems ahead of their game against Southampton, pretty much the entire back four out. But you still should be beating Burnley at home. Yeah. It was poor. Although, to a certain extent, it did kind of remind me of a kind of old Manchester United.
What, coming back from 2 down?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Interesting stat. Somebody actually wrote in about this, and I'm afraid I chopped your name off. But they said, any thoughts on the stat that a Jose Mourinho Premier League side has never come from 2-0 down to win a match? Wow. How many times has it happened? They've been 2-0 down 20 times.
Okay.
According to my stats, they've only managed to get 2 draws in those 20 from 2-0 down, and they've never won of a Jose Mourinho side.
How many teams do come back from 2-0 down?
Well, it's a dangerous lead, isn't it?
In the Premier League.
Can't be that many. No, you're laughing, but it can't be that many teams.
Oh, come on. Happens all the time, no?
No, it doesn't.
It's what makes this the greatest league in the world.
I'm more surprised that a Mourinho side has been 2-0 down 20 times. Because they don't concede goals, do they?
Well, usually. They have done in these recent games. Leicester, 10-man Leicester, equalising right at the death with that Harry Maguire. That was a set piece as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
And then this one with Burnley, after which Mourinho talked about how £300 million is not enough to compete and all that kind of thing. Richard Brunning's got a different question. Or related, if you will. He says, United are the only major club in Europe trying to defend their way to honours. I'm pretty sure Jose Mourinho's had the same staff forever. Is he being left behind? For example, Fergie evolved and reshuffled. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that was the Wenger issue for many years as well, to have the same people around him. Pat Rice, for example, who was a great assistant to Wenger and obviously a great player to Arsenal and a great servant to Arsenal. But there's a point where you need new ideas and you need people who would come in and say, okay, what about this and what about that? And the manager might not listen, and that's one thing, but at least you get given those opportunities to change stuff, reshuffle, you know, have new things, which is not the case. And yeah, Mourinho's Rifaria has been there all along. I'm not sure how much he has a say in what Mourinho does, but he surely not have the... He might have new ideas from 10 years ago, but he also might have the same ideas than 10 years ago. So
Do you think he's outmoded, Mourinho?
I think that, yeah, I think he's a bit, he needs to not reinvent himself because he's still one great manager, but I think there's a lot of things he could do better and should do better, and not still managing his teams like he used to manage Chelsea in 2004.
Listeners, the transfer window's about to open again, and you know what that means. Panic buys, yellow ties, and gossip column lies. And if you think you can identify better value than Chelsea did when they spent £50 million on a washed-up Fernando Torres back in 2011, then you need to check out the football stock market, Football Index. Football Index is a new way to profit from your football knowledge and make money. Buy players, build a portfolio, earn dividends, and sell at a profit. And a tax-free profit at that. Because you listen to the Totally Football show, you can try Football Index and trade up to £1,000 entirely risk-free. Just head to footballindex.co.uk, enter the promo code TOTALLY, and if you don't love Football Index, you'll get a full refund with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Download the app or play online at footballindex.co.uk and become a football trader today. T's and C's apply. You must be 18 or over, deposit required, and please, trade responsibly.
Totally Football League show listeners will be delighted to know that there's a brand new episode coming your way on Friday discussing Pulis to Borough, I'd imagine. And I don't know what else. But some of the other talking points they might pick up on. Wolves, 8 points clear. Bristol City moving into second place after Cardiff City got beaten by Fulham. And that kind of thing. Birmingham, rock bottom now. Rock bottom. 2 points from 21 under their new manager, Steve Cotterill, who, of course, used to be in charge of Bristol City. Huh. Koku Fetishist says, what's Michael's vision on the starting tactics of Zinedine Zidane in the Clásico, which also happened since last we spoke? There's a lot of criticism on it, says Koku Fetishist. This was the decision to kind of man-mark Lionel Messi, which backfired spectacularly. Is that fair?
I think that's a bit hard. I thought
they lost 3-0.
Yeah, but the first half was pretty nil. It was a nil-nil game, really.
Well,
it was
top. They were on top after the first half.
I mean, I did see some fancy graphics work in which the fact that it was, who was it, Kovacic, who was on
for the second goal.
Would basically, Messi would just go, I'm going to head over to this side of the pitch, drawing away that Real Madrid and leaving a massive space for everybody else to run through. I think Busquets had a merry stroll through the
Rakitic as well on the, Rakitic, the Suarez goal. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's the reason why that kind of man marking really is no longer being being done in professional football, let alone in a Clásico, because you hurt yourself more by losing your defensive shape following one guy all the way to the corner flag. So it's a weird thing. But maybe it just shows that Zidane as a coach is still, despite all the success, still learning, still a novice to a certain extent. I don't think he'll ever do that again.
There's some wonderful play by Busquets for that goal.
Yeah.
When he kind of shrugs off a challenge as a bit of a Cruyff turner deep position. I think he's probably still quite underappreciated.
Yeah, that's what I mean by pressing resistance. When you have a player who doesn't mind two or three players coming onto him because he will just turn, drop the shoulders and still play through them. Newcastle don't have these players, so you don't want them to have the ball in midfield.
I hear you. Let's send some love to Valencia's manager Marcelino, who had to go to hospital after having a motorway crash with a wild boar. Never good.
Never good.
Jules is the expert on that.
On wild boars? Have you had a crash with a wild boar?
No, but do you remember the...
I remember the French team. Which was it? It was
Nantes. They invaded the non-training ground 4 years
right.
ago. And they just wrecked it.
Wow. How's Claudio Ranieri doing with our friends at Nantes?
Very good.
Yes?
Fifth, which is the highest position at Christmas for 17 years.
Okay. Has he started decorating the house yet?
No, he's still locking the door.
Okay.
But that's fair enough.
All right. You know. Sending our love as well to former Sevilla manager Eduardo Berizzo, who Sevilla fired a week after. I suppose there's two ways of looking at this. It was very much presented as poor bloke comes back from cancer surgery and gets handed his notice. But they may have wanted to get rid of him before, but waited until he was given the all clear from his successful prostate cancer surgery, and fingers crossed it remains that way, before deciding that they no longer needed him. The results hadn't been great. Of course, they will be facing Man United in February in the Champions League. Word is Vincenzo Montella might be might be taking over there at the
Sanchez-Pizjuan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Montella.
I think he did a great job.
Yeah. What are the prospects for 2018 in Germany, Rafa? Because I imagine that there's very little German news per se. apart from, of course, David Wagner's extraordinary Christmas greeting. Did you see this?
I did see it, yeah. It was,
astonishing.
Peculiar.
Peculiar. If you haven't seen it, you know the old Feliz Navidad? There's an English version of that as the soundtrack. And he and his wife and fletching daughters basically choreograph a little number around their Christmas tree in which they mime to the camera, "We want to wish you a Merry Christmas." It's
sweet.
Yeah, it's worth watching.
Precious.
Or not. Anyway, what else from Germany?
What else? Well, we're on a winter break. There's not really that much happening.
Okay.
Bayern is still looking for a successor to Heinkes.
Okay.
They're still thinking that Heinkes might be the best successor to Heinkes, but he is not being swayed. Dortmund are still looking for a long-term successor to Peter Bosch, I think. Of course, they have Peter Stöger there installed. And, that's really it. Okay. Leon Goretzka apparently will make up his mind where he will move now over the course of the next few days on a holiday in Spain.
Yeah, he's in Torremolinos, I
believe.
Benidorm. Oh, Benidorm, sorry. Okay.
So, might not do much for the chances of any English club.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. All right, then. Julien, Joey Barton wants to go back to Marseille.
Yeah, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. I don't think they need him right now because they've got Luis Gustavo in midfield who's been incredible.
Has he?
Fantastic. For someone who, when they signed him for quite a lot of money, not so much in transfer fee, but in wages, people thought, really? At his age, he looked a bit, jaded when he was in his last season in Germany. He's been incredible. So well done to him. So I don't think they need Joey, although it would be good for the league for him to come back. After Patrice Evra, we might have someone else who, has some sort of interference with his own fans. Who knows? but for us, it's a big fight for second place between Lyon, Monaco and Marseille.
Yes.
They're all within 3 points, so that's going to be fascinating because PSG are going to win the league anyway.
Okay. Are they going to sign anyone over the window, do you think, PSG?
They will sell, for sure, and they will hopefully sign. That's what they want, a defensive midfielder, because they're a bit short in that position, but they can't spend too much for one. Depending on how much they sell, though, maybe they can spend a bit more. But someone like Danilo, for example, from Porto, who has a release clause of 60 million euros, look completely out of reach financially because of financial fair play. But if they do sell for, 80, 90, 100 million, they might stretch it a bit. So it'd be interesting to see.
Okay. Couple of transfer questions, Jules.
Yeah.
Neymar, will he still be there in 2018?
Yes.
The second half of 2018?
Yes.
Okay. Griezmann, is he leaving Atletico Madrid?
Yes.
Where for?
For Barcelona, probably.
Yeah.
In the summer, though, not now.
Yeah. Steven Nzonzi from Sevilla to Arsenal, West Ham, Everton?
Not to Arsenal, but probably to the Premier League, yeah.
Okay.
And Julian Draxler might come to the Premier League.
Ooh, yeah. Too?
I think PSG want to get rid of him.
Right. Where might he go, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there's a historic link with Arsenal, which might be being refreshed. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think anything's changed over the last 3 years. I'm not sure Arsenal need another kind of attacking midfielder. Okay, as a long-term solution or a replacement, more for Ozil than for Sanchez, I think, because Sanchez is more of a striker, really. Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily going to change Arsenal's fortunes that much, personally.
All right. More transfer questions. Are PSG really sniffing around Paulo Dybala?
No.
Okay. Is Kevin Trapp going to Liverpool?
So he wants to go. They don't want to let him go because he wants to go because he wants to play before the World Cup to be able to make the Germany squad. And right now he's not playing PSG. So that's why he wants to. It's always a problem. He wants to go to be to the World Cup. They don't want to lose him because then they would have to buy another keeper who would have
Maybe
to
they
be
could
number
get
two.
Mignolet.
There you go.
Do a swap.
Maybe Liverpool could wait until the next transfer window and play twice as much.
This Marouane Fellaini has been linked with PSG as well, which I would find incredible.
That would be brilliant.
We have a history of players with big hair, coming to the club.
Okay.
David Luiz.
Oh, yeah.
Ginola.
Charles-Édouard Coridon. But more fuzzy hair.
Fuzzy hair.
Like Ginola was there, no?
Yeah, but he had more
nice... He never had that.
Yeah. Sort of Lion
Good big
King.
Mane.
He did have a big mane, it's true.
But not fuzzy.
No.
Okay. Michael, Italy, you no doubt watched as Juve beat Roma, clocking up their 8th consecutive clean sheet. And this includes matches against who? Napoli, Barcelona?
Inter.
Inter, yeah. Wow. And now Roma. Yeah. A late flurry of chances for the Giallorossi, but, yeah, Juve gonna Juve, I guess. They and Napoli are now inching clear of the rest, because Napoli beat Samp 3-2. Now, you were saying about records. I'm distressed by the fact that Hamzic has now passed Maradona as their all-time top scorer. It just doesn't sit right.
It's one of the records that no one will never mention.
Yeah.
Never.
It feels a relatively low total.
Also, because it was a, I mean, it was a tap-in that he that gave it. 116th. But of course, Maradona's career there was curtailed by when it was rumbled that he was using someone else's.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, just surprised that someone at some point in Napoli's illustrious history hasn't got more than 116.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, fair dues.
Hamšík has been there more.
He's been there a long time.
Longer now.
10 years now.
Yeah.
It's apples and oranges.
Exactly.
Yeah. Paul Lewandowski might have broken Harry Kane's 2017 record if he hadn't been on the beach for 3 weeks.
Right.
Can't score any goals.
No. Oh, and then, of course, what was it? Wednesday night was the derby in the Coppa Italia. Inter, who, as I say, slipped a little bit off the pace after a couple of defeats in the league, are taking on a Milan team who played to an empty San Siro in a 2-0 defeat to Atalanta prior to this. So neither team doing well. And then this kind of one-off quarter-final, which Milan won. Milan, headlines before were sent to bed with no supper after that 2-0 defeat to Atalanta. But this morning, the Corriere dello Sport had Ringio Star, which I think is my Italian headline of the... certainly of the festive period. Gattuso finally came up with a win. It was a 1-0 win. There was all that business over the goalkeepers. Did you... I'm not sure if you were following this.
Yeah, of course, Giorgio Donnarumma's brother.
Yeah, who was one of the bones of contention that the fans had. They're called a parasite, even, by the Milan ultras.
Because they were forced to sign him...
Yeah, to keep his brother sweet.
Renew the brother's contract.
And so he comes in, and
I
think...
It was amazing.
Amazing, I think I would be.
I was shocked.
Given that his last goalkeeping experience would have been in either in Serie B or Greece, one of the two. He didn't do too bad. He kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, I thought his distribution was good.
He did also score an own goal, which very fortunately for him... was ruled out for an kind of
but considering
offside.
The pressure, imagine the pressure it was under.
Yeah.
You know, like he knew that was, and against Inter, although only in the cup.
Mm.
I thought he did really well.
Inter in rotten form, anyway.
Mm.
Who do Milan envisage as a long term solution? Can't be Reno, surely.
Well, there's been talk of Mancini. I know, you can make that face all you want, Rafa. I'm just saying what I read in the Gazetta.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do they know? Possibly not.
What's the Ancelotti situation?
Oh, I don't think he wants it.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I've not spoken to him about it.
Too much coaching involved.
Too much coaching. Oh. No, but if you're Ancelotti, you've been at Milan. You've had some great times. You've won Champions League, all that yada yada. You go back to what is the shell of a club now. And it must be so depressing. I mean, even for people like Gattuso, who were there when, you know, Milanello was Milanello and it was the home of champions and all that. And you go there now and I could just imagine every day he'll be saying, oh, so we can... And they'll say, no, that was then, but now we can't. And it's only going to get worse with the, you know, when UEFA impose their swinging sanctions, these Euro bureaucrats.
Are you happy with Italy playing, you know, at Christmas? For
first
time in 20... Well, Serie B and Serie C have done it, like...
Yeah, Serie B have done it, but probably Serie C did it, although I wasn't really paying attention.
Last year.
So what they're doing is they've got another round of games this weekend in which Inter will be playing Lazio, who are absolutely flying at the moment, and booked their place, in the Coppa Italia semi-finals, which... Yeah, anyway. But that's a big game coming up on Saturday, Inter-Lazio.
So you're happy? You're happy?
Yeah, and then they have their break after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still get a break... But it's not at Christmas. I think it's quite nice.
I think it's cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it too.
Makes sense. That's Italy. It is. Let's get back onto the Premier League after this. There's two whole rounds of action before we next pitch up. Two whole rounds of action.
Yeah. That's...
Two and a bit, actually, because we've still got one game, which is Crystal Palace Arsenal,
left
over from the last lot.
Yes, which I'm going to tonight.
You're going to that tonight?
Yeah, and then a lot of teams have two games in 3 days, which is pretty tough.
That's mental, isn't it?
And there'll be so many. I mean, it's the case every year, but maybe this year more than ever, there'll be so many rotations for that FA Cup weekend because the players are just exhausted.
That's the one afterwards, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Right. Well, what are the games that people should, in this busy time, make a note to watch? I've already got a big red ring in my scholastic diary around Sunday 1:30 Palace City. he's a cheeky one. Palace taking on City. Mm. And they might be, you know, left sore at the behind and all that stuff. Anyway, we talked about that though before, didn't we? Arsenal, Julien. Ooh, that big game against Chelsea on Wednesday at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Before that, they got West Brom, but Chelsea on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Season-defining match, methinks.
Well, it could well be, because, you know, if so they've got a game in hand compared to Chelsea, who've already played.
But of course, tonight, yeah.
Yeah, tonight. Yeah. But they're already 8 points behind them, Chelsea in third. So you can't really, depending on what happened,
it's a bit
difficult for us to look into that Arsenal-Chelsea game without knowing what's going to happen in the next two games for Arsenal. Because by then they could potentially only be 5 points.
That's true.
Or 2 points. All right, but
whatever the situation is, it's going to be a great game Wednesday night at the Emirates. I mean, it might not be a great game, but it's certainly a fascinating fixture.
Yeah, the 0-0, I think, at Stamford Bridge was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the last two seasons, we've had great Chelsea-Arsenal, and Arsenal-Chelsea is obviously the one last year at the Emirates was the one that made Antonio Conte change his tactics, go on to that incredible 13 wins in a row.
Of course.
And win the league. And then the Chelsea-Arsenal from last year where Hazard humiliated Laurent Koscielny and all the Arsenal defence, for example. Then we had a very 0-0 Italian draw this year at Stamford Bridge. So let's see what comes up at the Emirates.
Where are you on the great Wilshire debate, Jules?
Wow. I think the talent is there. I think there's the guys...
Do you like Arsenal more with him in than without him in?
I'm not sure Ozil and Wilshere can play together.
Okay.
That's the thing. And
really?
I wouldn't drop Ozil. The last few games, so Chaka plays as a defensive midfielder, but he's not a defensive midfielder. Mm. I think that's quite clear to everybody. I guess you can get him out and put Coquelin in. So you can play, you know, Coquelin as a proper defensive midfielder, whether you know, you like it or not. Ozil and Wilshere have the same movement. Okay, one is a bit deeper than the other, but Wilshere doesn't play that deep anymore.
Okay.
He likes being quiet.
And what about Ramsey then?
Well, you certainly can't play Ramsey and Wilshere together.
Mm.
So again, you have to... But I guess that's what managers have to do. That's what, in every club, you need to pick what you think is the best combination, especially in midfield.
Right.
The talent is no problem. I just don't think him and Ozil can play well together at the same time. And I haven't seen them play well together at the same time.
Are you optimistic for Arsenal in their trip to Crystal Palace this evening and their little jaunt to the Hawthorns, which is coming up on Sunday?
It's usually where they struggle. Both, I mean, West Brom are in terrible form, as we said, and they're probably not as good on set pieces as they used to with Tony Pulis. And usually when Arsenal used to go there under Tony Pulis, they were conceding goals on set pieces all the time and losing, like they did last year, 3-1, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting thing for Alexandre Lacazette, for example, who can finish top scorer for a French player this year in 2017. Which Michael loves.
There's a stat, isn't it?
There's a stat.
Not in a year, but for a French player.
He's one behind Mbappe, for example. So I know that for him, it means a lot.
Does
so
it?
Let's see if he can score in those two games.
Okay.
Does it actually mean a lot to him?
Yeah,
genuinely?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
And people in France, probably because it's the Mbappe craze.
Yes.
But I think people in France really, really want Mbappe to finish top goal scorer for French players in 2017, which means that I think people in France hope that Lacazette fails miserably in the next two games, not to catch Mbappe.
It's the sort of thing you want to win when you don't win the real stuff.
Right. Like a trophy for fourth place, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a stat. West Brom are on course to make it 19 without a win in the Premier League, currently held by Villa. Here's a question, actually, which somebody wrote in. Oh, yeah, Andy and Brum says, why were Everton and West Brom allowed to carry on with that kick clash? I must admit, I was staggered by that. So basically, West Brom had their vertical blue and white stripes and Everton have a navy kit, yes? But the back of West Brom's jersey was completely navy, so that if somebody hoofed the ball up and all the players are running in the same direction, OK, if the ball's up that end, it doesn't matter, but anyone from behind can only see one colour. It's bizarre. Really bizarre. I don't understand that
at all. It's the referee's... decision, isn't it?
Yeah, but also it's just common sense. That's all we're asking for, consistency.
Who's thinking about the black and white views?
Yeah. Anyway, Everton, that was a 0-0 draw for them in that game. And this is a big game for everyone. Everton hosting United.
That is on New Year's Day.
Right.
5:30.
Oof.
Which is a Monday.
Yeah. It's not the only big game on New Year's Day. There's Bromley Ebbsfleet as well, which I will be at. It's part of BT's very special National League coverage.
Is that a bit of a derby?
Yeah. Tune in and find out, Michael.
You've come a long way from San Siro.
From San Siro. Yeah, but it's all, you know what, the football is painted in many different colours. I like
to see
the bigger
picture. Colour at Everton and West Brom.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Good one.
Good one.
Good one. And before that, on the 30th, actually, Saturday, I've got Aldershot Maidstone, which is very much a battle of promotion candidates in the National League.
Hasn't the lead in the table has changed like 55 times? It's quite crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Everybody loses. And
it's mad.
It's cool. It's a good league.
Yeah, but it's very entertaining. Anyway, Everton hosting United. When did you say that was? New Year's Day?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because Everton are fresh from back-to-back nil-nils in a big Sam style. Bolasie coming back, typical Sam Allardyce player as well. It's exciting to see him back, isn't it? Does he fit into Sam's plans? Apparently he does.
I think so. I think he's quite responsible defensively, can counter-attack well. He's kind of what Everton have been missing for a lot of this season, a bit of pace, a bit of dribbling out wide in particular. I think Everton are making some moves to sign Turkish striker Tosun.
Tosun of Besiktas.
They're really denying it in Turkey, though.
Well, they probably have to. The football fan there is passionate, and he is such a key part of Besiktas.
Who are still, of course, involved in the Champions League.
Mm. That would be a big signing for Everton, though, wouldn't it? If it were the case.
Yeah, he's a great striker. Yeah. Really good.
Okay.
And he's not your typical cliche Sam Allardyce striker. He's more your pre-Big Sam Bolton era Allardyce striker, where you had a lot of really creative players, like Joe KF.
Like Joe KF.
Really used to admire.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are Everton going to continue United's sequence of games without a win?
I wouldn't be surprised, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if it's another 0-0.
Won't be, because Man United are playing Southampton first.
Ah.
Again, James, again. Too far ahead of your time.
Oh, dear. All right.
Just rephrase the question.
It will be a big game. No, I don't mind that. Southampton, yeah. And that's...
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When it does come round, though, the United game will be a big one for Wayne Rooney, who I hope will be feeling better by then.
I think Everton have got a really good chance of, again, frustrating Jose and United.
Mm.
Can easily see them pick up a point there.
Okay. Liverpool host Leicester, then go to Burnley. Those are two tough fixtures, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and Klopp really moaned about this a while ago. He said, you know, I can understand Boxing Day and all that, but why do we have to play a Saturday and then Monday? What is the point? Can't we play Tuesday, Wednesday? And of course other clubs do. But the fact that I think that it's Burnley makes it extra tough after just two games, because Burnley always give you a really hard time. This year they're better than ever in terms of results, and it's the sort of game that can break you, I think, at the end of in the middle of a really tough fixture list. So it's probably the one of the worst games to have away to Burnley on that game.
Right.
That day.
On the subject of Burnley, Joey Barton saying Stephen Defoe's free kick, the one at Old Trafford, should be on the back of every paper. To beat the best keeper in the world from that far out, come on, says Joey. Was good, wasn't it?
It was good. You know, Stephen Defoe, when he was like 15, 16, was the best player of his age category in Europe. It
really?
Was amazing. Yeah, United, all the big clubs in Europe wanted to sign him.
Mm.
And it's funny because it's another example of you don't always have the career that it looks like you're going to have when you're 15 or 16, talented you are. And Harry Kane at 16 was surely never meant to have the career that he's having now. So it's fascinating. And
what did you want to do when you were 15, Jules?
I probably still believe that I could become a professional football player.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Rafa? DJ?
Singer, yeah, probably DJ. More, no?
You wanted to be a singer. Do you think Rafa?
Him. Yeah, do you remember DJ? He had that boy band in Germany at the time?
I never had a boy band.
Yeah, you had. Do you remember that photo?
No, yeah, it's nothing.
On EFS.
Yeah.
It's just nothing to do with music, that photo.
Right. Well, that doesn't seems, exclude it.
Joey Barton's comment about the back pages seems like weirdly antiquated, doesn't it?
Mm.
I mean, who's concerned what's on the back pages? It's not a thing.
What did you want to be when you were 15, Michael?
I can't remember. I don't think I had any idea.
No,
I haven't.
Just waiting for something to find you.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to host a successful forum. Of course, podcasts hadn't been invented in those days, but just a place for football people to come and talk and other football people to listen. And then I wanted to host another one shortly afterwards.
Yeah, okay.
Ooh, I just want to mention this stat about Chelsea. No team in Europe's big five divisions has seen more league goals scored by Spanish players this season than Chelsea. They are level with Real Sociedad.
That is interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, they scored two against Brighton. Mm. Both his sisters were Spanish as well, as Pilicueta and Fabregas. That as Pilicueta-Morata combination is quite something.
It certainly is. Is it six times the pair have combined?
Yeah.
Is that ever? I think it must be ever. Well, it can't be this season.
I can't believe
it.
Well, he's only joined for this season, so
That must be the season then,
Yeah.
Morata and calendar scored... year as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Morata scored 10 goals, so it's 6 out of 10. But you can't. You do wonder when... The next team they play,
yes,
you know, look at them on video and just analyse
their... Mark as Pilicueta.
No, but he always does the same. He comes out from his defender position into, you know, the opposition's half and then crosses the ball like that.
Yeah.
That's the way the goal comes. How come, you know, you don't say to one of your forwards, just be careful if Pilicueta comes out with the ball?
Yeah. I know, but it's like Iron Robin, isn't it? They all know what he's going to do.
Yeah, but... That's easier to stop, the Azpilicueta cross and the Morata header.
Oh, my
Arsenal
word.
Arsenal dealt very well with it at the FA Cup final.
There you go. Well, we'll see how Arsenal deal with it. Stoke first for Chelsea, and then Arsenal. Stoke this weekend, and then Wednesday, Arsenal-Chelsea.
Chelsea is a fascinating team and club to me because it feels as if it's only one argument or one problem away from blowing up, but they do... find very consistent results.
Mm, they're only 1 point behind Man United now.
And I'm still not sure what's going to happen for them, if this is just going to sort of tick along and they finish third and everything's fine. Because in the past, that in itself used to create big problems. You couldn't really finish third or fourth without serious repercussions as a Chelsea coach. It could be that Conte, knowing that he's going to go, basically has stopped caring and is kind of impervious to pressure to a certain extent. It's fascinating, I think, to see how they're doing really well without really kind of catching anyone's imagination or suggesting that it's an entirely happy kind of setup.
Men and ladies of the Totally Football Show, why waste time going to the shop to buy overpriced quadruple-bladed vibrating turbo razors and making the likes of Thierry Henry and Roger Federer even richer by doing so? Instead, head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally and pick up a personally engraved razor and 6 super sharp blades delivered right to your door for just £4. There are no gimmicks with Cornerstone, just a closer, smoother shave than ever before. And it doesn't just work on your face either. I used it on Jimbo's head before we started recording. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see for yourself. And if you don't love your first Cornerstone shave, they'll give you your money back, no questions asked.
We're looking forward to all of that football and we'll be back next week to discuss it all. Before we leave you, though, loads of listeners asking for us to nominate great moments, our best bits and worst bits of the last year. Ben Dawson, Roberto Lynn Grant again, what's your best memory 2017? Phil, Daniel John Taken. What do you see as a standout footballing moment of the last calendar year, Michael, calendar year? He suggests Neymar to PSG. And the implementation of VAR. Interesting nominations. Phil also wants us to say our hopes for 2018. Michael, you did yours last week. Mm. And of course, we all remember what they were. What were they?
You don't remember me recalling Kingstonian's famous victory.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was good. And did you have a low point?
Yeah, I said the fact that the two European finals were kind of decided by deflected goals annoyed me.
Yeah. Julien, beat that.
It's hard to beat Michael Cox. My highs, they're very French, I'm sorry.
Oui.
The first one is Mbappe, obviously, 2017. It was for him, only 18, he turned 19 a week ago. He's just, I think, he's better than anyone was before at his age, and I think he's going to be incredible. The other one is, for people who don't know, in the second division last season, Amiens got promoted to Ligue 1. By scoring a goal in the 96th minute. Before that goal, they were still sixth in the table because it was so close to the top of the table. Six teams could go up before the last match day of the season. And by scoring over a free kick in the 96th minute, they went up for the first time in their 110-year history.
Incredible.
And it was really incredible. If you haven't seen it, you can find it easily on Twitter or
YouTube. Where are they now, Julien?
They're doing actually quite well in Ligue 1 so far. So good on them. Yeah, good on them.
Good
and
you.
My lows.
Oh yeah,
I've got the Dortmund attack. Obviously,
was that
the
this
Monaco
last
game.
Year?
It was. Yeah.
Crikey.
So
yeah,
that has to be in my lows. Raymond Kopa, one of the greatest French players ever, dying in March, and Patrice Evra high kick on his own fan. I mean, that's kind of a high and a low as well. I don't know which one though is more.
Okay. Did we ever find out what kind of the backstory of that?
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't bear the insult and the jokes, so he thought, "Come down, let's have a chat." And the ultras came down and
kick in the head.
Kick in the head, bosh.
Mm.
Now he's pulling cars in Dubai, so that's okay, I guess.
He's pulling cars.
Yeah.
How do you mean pulling cars?
His new fitness regime training.
He's
pulling a 4x4.
Oh really?
That's the kind of thing James presents.
No, I was just going to say, you're interested in seeing people pulling bigger vehicles than that.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
Well, no, there's World's Strongest Man just started last night. Actually,
really?
It's not. They're pulling buses in the heat. I think probably tonight will feature a bus being pulled. But it's a 35, 40 ton aircraft. A proper commercial airliner
they're pulling
in the final, which we had a very narrow window of opportunity to use it because the plane turned up late, and then they had passengers waiting in the terminal to get on it and fly somewhere else.
Right.
And they
fair enough.
Bizarre, isn't it, really? So we were there on the airport, and the guy's going, you know, we've got a flight schedule to leave. These guys had to pull the plane. Yeah.
They could have pulled the plane with the people on board, no?
Well, that would have been let's not exaggerate.
You know what? I've never
There's
seen
some
you
surprises
tweet...
in that plane pull, by the
I've
way.
I've never seen you tweet one of your own shows more than The World's Strongest Man yesterday.
It's just, you know, I've been waiting for it to come on air.
Only 6 hours before World's Strongest Man. Only 5 hours
before.
The
thing is, I've been waiting for it to happen since last, because let's be frank, it happened in May. And I've been sat there going, I can't wait for the one with the meerkats. That's, I think, tomorrow.
Okay.
With the meerkats?
Meerkats. It's Botswana, isn't it?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Right.
Rafa, highs and lows?
Well, the lows are the same.
Yeah.
At least one of them is the same. I think we forgot, A, how recent it was, and B, just how badly this could have turned out. An entire football team could have been assassinated, which...
By a man looking to speculate on their stock market
which
price.
Which is incredible. And his court case has just started a few days ago in Germany.
Okay, so allegedly looking to speculate. Okay, good.
No, it's fine. There's no contempt of court laws in Germany, so you can say whatever you want.
Really?
Yeah. Because there's no jury. So
okay.
We don't think that the judge will be swayed by what you say on the pod.
Fascinated by that.
Well, that's obviously that's the worst thing that happened in football, full stop.
Yeah.
Highs, the 4-4 draw in the Ruhr Derby on the other day week after a 4-0 lead from Dortmund, 4-4 Schalke. What a game, for eternity really. I really enjoyed a little bit like Jules, perhaps not as quite as much, sort of the discovery of Monaco. I think it's very rare that you get a kind of a new team in inverted commas suddenly bursting on the scene the way they did and playing as excitingly as they did with lots of players that perhaps we'd heard a little bit of but hadn't really seen in that kind of full flow. And I think that was an amazing thing to see and really enjoyable. And from a personal view, I really enjoyed Per Mertesacker going up to lift a trophy at the FA Cup as Arsenal captain, when everybody laughed about the fact that he was playing his first game, he started his first game of the season in the final, and people said, yeah, it's 3-0, 4-0, Chelsea will absolutely smash them. And he and, of course, his Arsenal teammates came up with one of the most surprising,
they had the last
surprising
laugh,
victories.
Mm. Excellent. Okay. I didn't do my last time, actually. I think one of them would have to be the Benevento header. And my big thing for 2018 will be watching them stay up from however million points it is that they're behind. It's huge.
That's your wish for 2018?
Well, I think that's going to be one of my... Okay, there's got lots of other things I'd like from 2018, but on a football
level. I'd
like
to say a prayer and wish for world peace.
Yeah, world peace and Benevento staying up. Whatever order, you know, whichever comes first. No, there's lots of other things I would love to see happen in 2018 outside of football. As I'm sure there are for you listeners, but yeah, that was fantastic. What a great, it summed up why everyone loves football. Benevento, the diving header
incredible.
From yeah. The low
There's
point
a World Cup coming. Did you know that?
Yeah,
nearly forgot.
World Cup in 2018. I think my low point might have been Lazio's fans leaving the Anne Frank stickers in the Curvos hood at the Stadio Olimpico, just because, good Lord. I mean, for so many years, and they still do stuff like that. Just extraordinary. Yeah, anyway. Hey, here's to happier times in 2018. More of the good things, less of the bad ones. And to finish off after this, we'll get our usual chat with Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Yep, I am joined by Mr. Paddy Power himself. But Paddy, before we go through the picks on this week's Hot Shot jackpot, a word about that jackpot. It's gone down to 100,000, but, well, it hasn't gone down. It's because someone's won it.
I was going to say, yeah, it's a bit harsh to say it's gone down, but yeah, it was won. It was there was 500 grand. It was shared between a couple of people. I think four or five people might have shared it the other day on Stephen's Day, on the Boxing Day on the 26th. And then so it starts again at 100 grand. So it won't be won for a couple of rollovers, and then we get it up, back up towards half a million again, which would be nice.
Well, we're doing terribly here, but I've gone for some pretty sensible picks this time. Just a reminder to everyone, you have to be 18 or over, but the app itself is free to download, the Hotshot Jackpots app. So let's go through the picks here. We're going for first goal scorer and six games. The first one is Chelsea versus Stoke. I fancy the look of Morata here. He got a hat trick against them last time they played.
Yeah, funny. I wouldn't put you off because Stoke are kind of very stuttery this season, aren't they? So you would fancy Chelsea to bang in a few goals. And Morata's been pretty dominant as well this year. He's played pretty well. He's one of their best players. So yeah, could put you off, definitely.
Coutinho in Liverpool v Leicester. He's had a good Christmas period. Liverpool scoring lots of goals. Hopefully they can keep them out this time as well.
He just seems to be happy in his own skin now or something. He's playing well, he's got a smile on his face, and he's also banging in the goals. He's not scoring them, he's setting them up anyway. Yeah, Liverpool absolutely on fire. They were just brilliant in the 5-0 the other day, so it could be any of them now, to be any of the front three or four that Liverpool have, but Coutinho probably. Yeah, why not? I'd go for him as well.
Watford versus Swansea is the next game up. Watford ended their really bad run on Boxing Day. Swansea are just shockingly bad, so I can't see anyone other than a Watford player scoring, and Richarlison is my man here.
This should be Watford's chance to kind of get a little bit of a run together, and Richarlison, why not? Yeah, I mean, look, honestly, it could be any of them. I think Swansea will let in goals from anywhere, so yeah, I wouldn't put you off him either.
Man, you haven't had the best of the festive period, and Moo is moaning once again. But I think that Zlatan, who hasn't looked, I mean, he's had a long-term injury, of course, hasn't quite looked his old self. I fancy him up against Saints here, Southampton.
Zlatan, yeah, I'm not sure he is what he was, you know, and I think we, after his first season, kind of everyone kind of cottons on to how to play against him, and he's not quite as effective. So this is the one where I think it's a bit of a head scratcher for me that you're picking him, but he's about 5-1 and he scored the first goal, so you know, he's one of the favourites, definitely. Like,
okay, Palace versus Manchester City. Manchester City can't be beaten, they can't be stopped. I do like the look of Wilfried Zaha here, but I think Leroy Sané is going to be my pick.
Pick Sané, why not? You could pick any of about three or four players, because they do share the goals around a bit, don't they? But yeah, so we're not going to put you off him, it could be De Bruyne, it could be anyone, you know, but Sané, yeah, why not?
And I think that there may be a little bit of value in this final game of the Hotshot Jackpot. It's West Brom versus Arsenal. I don't know if they'll win. For Solomon Rondon to get the first one here.
Well, look, he's a 13-2 shot, so he is fourth or fifth in the betting behind. I mean, Lacazette's favourite there or whatever. But yeah, so absolutely has a reasonable chance. I thought Arsenal would be a dodgy favourite in that game because they can be ropey enough to follow.
Yes, indeed. You can download the free Hotshot Jackpot app now and find out these odds and more at paddypower.com, 18 plus only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, stop. And that's it for this edition of the Totally Football Show for 2017. Many thanks to Michael Cox.
Thank you.
Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you.
And Julien Laurent.
Thank you, Jim.
For being with us. And you, listener, do enjoy your end of year. And here's to a terrific 2018 in your company, I hope. And we'll see you then. Bye.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.